people always say, well, I don't want to just sell on Amazon. What if Amazon shuts my account down? Amazon likes to shoot first and ask questions later. Then I'm screwed. I need to be selling on Walmart. I need to be selling on Jet. I need to have my own Shopify site. But most people, the vast majority of people, that's a very small percentage of their sales.
Welcome to the Quiet Light Podcast with Joe Valley and Mark Doust. Since 2007, Quiet Light Brokerage has been helping thousands of online entrepreneurs realize their dream of buying and selling online businesses. And now, we're bringing all the knowledge our team has acquired straight to you. No matter your niche or industry, these lessons, tips, and strategies will help you build, grow, acquire, or sell your online businesses better. And now, here's Joe and Mark.
Okay, Joe, I want to start this off with a question for you. Back when you owned Purestat, how long did it take before you realized this is going to be able to grow into something? And how long did it take before you turned it into kind of like a real business that could be scaled?
That's a great question. I wish I had a really good prepared answer for it.
I hit you completely unguarded with that.
Yeah. So. Look, I'm one of those guys that built a business without knowing it could actually sell it. And as you and a lot of folks that know my history, I started out on doing radio direct response and did a TV infomercial and then eventually took it 100% online. But early on in my entrepreneurial career, I did have a sit down with a good friend, family friend that, you know, slapped me upside the head in terms of accounting. And I did have my ducks in a row in that sense. And I always built what was a real business so that if I got hit by a bus, you know, one of my head people could take over, my wife could take over, things of that nature. But it never actually occurred to me until I was emotionally tired that I could sell the business. And then I reached out to a guy named Mark Doust back in, 2010, right?
Way too long ago. You know, I think one of the problems I see, and I've seen over the past 11 years with entrepreneurs, is we make the business an extension of ourselves and an extension of our personality. And because of that, sometimes we don't really build the business in a way that can be sold. And we don't have that intentionality of building something outside of ourselves. And I know you talked to Kevin King, who had a lot of suggestions and tips as to how somebody should be building their business for that expansion. And again, for lack of a better term, a real business.
Kevin used the term real business probably 10 times in the first 5 minutes. And he is such an honest, straightforward, tell it like it is kind of guy that he says, you got to build a real business. Grow up, build a real business. Build a real business. And he just says it in a way that you just have to go, okay, he's right. I need to stop messing around, grow up, and build a real business that is going to be really attractive to buyers when I'm ready to sell. Kevin is one of the few guys that is out there teaching, helping, coaching entrepreneurs build e-commerce businesses with a focus on an eventual exit. He's got a 4-year plan in terms of, you know, step 1, 2, 3, 4 in terms of year 1, 2, 3, 4 with an exit in mind. Not that you're going to exit, but that you're in a position to exit in 48 months. Part of that is giving it enough time to mature and grow and gain value. And he's a believer, as many folks in his position are, that a majority of the revenue that an entrepreneur gets to put in their bank account comes upon an exit. And that's a simple matter of math. We hear Scott Dietz talk about that a lot, and he's an advocate of that as well. But I tell you, the gurus are a dime a dozen. And Kevin's been around a long time. He walks the walk, he talks the talk. He's a guest podcast on lots of podcasts, AM, PM podcast co-host, helps out a lot with Helium 10. And now he is so sought after, he's being asked to go and present and speak around the country, around the world, and he's being paid to do it. You know, you and I have to, you know, we have to say, can we sponsor? And by the way, can we speak? And we pay them to let us up on stage. These people are actually paying Kevin to get up there and talk because the wisdom that he shares is so valuable.
That's fantastic. I want to get to this, hear what he has to say. I was at a conference a few months ago, and there was a speaker who said, and I'm going to keep this PG, even though he wasn't PG, but he said, if you want to have a real business, you have to do real business stuff. And it's one of those truisms that's just kind of basic, but good to hear once in a while. So I'm interested to hear what Kevin has to say about it. And for those listening, I think it'd be a good idea to listen to some of the specifics that he gives here and just measure up against what you're doing right now. Are you doing these things? Have you been doing real business stuff within your business to actually build something that's real and external?
Perfect. Let's go to it.
Hey, folks, it's Joe Valley with the Quiet Light Podcast. And I have an amazing guest today. His name is Kevin King. Kevin, how are you today?
I'm doing good, Joe. How are you doing?
I'm good, man. You're kind of a legend in this industry now. You're traveling all over the world, speaking at events, getting paid to speak at events, helping 6, 7, 8-figure entrepreneurs build their Amazon businesses. That's kind of the intro. Why don't you tell us who you are and what you're all about so the people who understand it directly from you?
Sure, no problem. Yeah, I've been doing e-commerce since the 1990s. So I go back about 25 years or so, since the days before there was even a Google. I've been selling e-commerce through my own websites. I started selling on Amazon in around the year 2000 or so. And then been doing the FBA model, which most people are familiar with now, since 2015. Originally started out doing wholesale and some arbitrage and some other stuff on Amazon, and still do that through another business. And then I'm also involved in a couple different training things where I teach advanced level sellers, 6, 7, 8-figure sellers in the Illuminati Mastermind, which is a monthly training, like a 3-hour training of the latest tactics and techniques for sellers. And then we do a live event once a year. It's a pretty high level live event. And then I have a course called the Freedom Ticket, which trains new people on how to sell on Amazon, as well as I have a 7-figure Amazon business that I do myself. And then I'm partners with a couple other people in a couple other Amazon businesses. And then I, like you said, I speak at a lot of events all over the world for Amazon sellers and e-commerce.
And why don't you tell us how many you went to so far this year? This is being recorded in late 2018.
Yeah, in 2018, I'm at 26 events so far this year.
Insane. How many different countries?
Oh, man, I haven't added that up. The number of countries would probably be at least 10.
So,
yeah, I haven't actually added up. It's China, Hong Kong. Let's see, several in the United States, including Hawaii. That's not another country, but Hawaii. And then several in Germany. Let's see, Germany, London, Greece, Romania, Ukraine. Man, I'm all over the place.
That's incredible. And you're attending and speaking at these as well, right?
That's correct, yeah. Some of them I'm just an attendee, but over half of them I'm actually speaking at.
All right. Well, let's help the people that are listening, those that have Amazon businesses and those that don't, those that want to get started. A lot of folks like you and me started off with our own websites and Google AdWords and content development and eventually morphed over to Amazon. I didn't. I sold my business before you were selling on Amazon, but before I realized that Amazon was a tool I could sell on. I sold in 2010. I look back and think, man, gosh, I wish I knew Kevin King back then.
Yeah, the Amazon space is one of those that, you know, that it had a hot wave around 2012 or so. The guys over at Amazing.com kind of set this off where they turned it into a business model and started, instead of get rich in real estate, it's get rich in selling on Amazon. And so they started doing courses and it took off. And, you know, since then, there's probably about 400 or 500 other people that have come out with different courses. And to be frank, most of them suck. The guys at Amazing do a pretty good job. And there's 3 or 4 others. I like to think that mine is one of the better ones, but most of them are people that either aren't selling on Amazon or tried it and failed, or they're just not very good. So you have to be very, very careful out there. It's become a big industry because a lot of people realize they can make more money selling the shovels than they can selling the gold or whatever that saying is. You know, it's teaching people how to do it rather than doing it. But the opportunity, so as a result of that, a lot of people say, hey, is selling on Amazon saturated? Is it too late? Did I miss the boat? I say absolutely not. I think it's better than ever right now. The difference is it's no longer an easy game, where when 2 or 3, 4 years ago, it was pretty easy to go to Alibaba.com, find a product, slap your name and logo on it and sell it on Amazon. And those days are pretty much gone. It's a real business now. So if you approach this as a real business and not a get-rich-quick scheme, and not listen to a lot of these course guys that are saying, you know, you can quit your job tomorrow and go sit on the beach and drink margaritas and just check the app and watch the sales come in, but treat it like a real business and keep your job. Don't quit your job maybe for a year. You know, as long as you got money, unless you have a lot of money in the bank saved up that you can live on. If you treat this like a real business and can reinvest it, there's no better business out there that has a better return right now. And Jill, you know this. You guys broker a bunch of businesses. So you see these numbers and you see the guys that do it wrong and the guys that do it right. And like I always say, you know, if you take $5,000, you put that into the best mutual fund on Wall Street, in about 3 years, you'll have about $7,500 or so, roughly, you know, just on average. If you put $5,000 in an Amazon business and do it right, that $5,000 in 3 years can pretty easily turn into about $52,000. So the ROI is tremendous, but you got to do it right. You got to treat it like a business. And I always tell people, if you're going to start in this business, the thing that you need to do is, I say it's like a 4-year plan. Year one, you're basically learning and you're earning. Whether that's you're taking a course from someone that you paid, you're watching some YouTube videos or whatever you may be doing. You got to be careful though if you're watching YouTube videos, because some of that stuff is out of date or incorrect. So you're learning and you're earning. The second year, you're optimizing. So maybe you're adding additional products, adding additional variations. The third year, you're preparing to sell. You're getting all your ducks in a row, getting all your financials correct. Hopefully you've been doing this all along, but you're really optimizing your financials. In the fourth year, you sell. The best opportunity in this business is not running the business, it's in selling the business. Because when you sell at Amazon business, typically that's where you're going to take in over half of your profits, sometimes as much as 70 or 80% of what you're going to walk away with from running the business. And people would say, why the heck would you sell a business? If this is such a great opportunity, Kevin, why the heck would you even sell it? And I say, well, it's leverage. I mean, there's no better. That's how you get ahead. You know, in real estate, that's how you get ahead wherever it is leveraged. You know, even if you're making a $200,000 a year off this business, if you can walk away in 1 year with $1 million, let's say, in your pocket, you can just turn around, pay off some bills, take a nice vacation, buy the wife a new car, whatever you want to do, and then start over again. And I know a lot of people that are on their third Amazon-based business right now. I know a guy that sold the first one in a year for $500,000, sold the second one for $7.5 million, and now his third one. I know another couple, really nice husband and wife team that just recently sold one for $4 million, got a multiple of almost 4.2, and their next goal is 2021 to sell it for 10, and the next one for 10 million. So it's a great way to do that.
That's, I think, once you learn the skill set, to the folks that I talk to that build these and we sell them for them, once they've got that skill set, they can go back to the well. They can go back to the Amazon well and build another brand because they understand it. But let's throw some tips out there. You said you could turn 5,000 into 50 in 4 years. We've seen 5,000 turned into, you know, several million in 4 years. How much would you recommend to the newbies that are out there? And what I want to do here is give some tips from you, the expert. Again, so much misinformation out there. I want you to talk about, you know, a few tips that newer folks should do so that it increases their success level. And then to those folks that are out there doing it now, some of the things that you may be able to call from your travels and your experience that are new, that are completely different than they were maybe even just 12 months ago. But how much money do you think somebody at a minimum should start off with, and should they be focused on branding, wholesaling, arbitrage? What is your opinion and what they should do to get started and increase their chances of success so that they can have that big exit down the road?
Like I say, there's like 11 different ways to skin the Amazon cat. You can make money off affiliate market by doing wholesale, by doing retail arbitrage, online arbitrage, and there's several other ways. The best way, in my opinion, is private label. That has the most opportunity and the best margin. So if you're looking to maximize your return, you should really look at the private label side.
Let's define that, if you would, please.
Sure.
Just for the new one starting off.
The private label is where you're actually basically creating a brand, attempting to create a brand, or you're actually taking products that already exist, maybe modifying them slightly and putting your name on it. It's kind of like if you go to the supermarket and you're looking at ketchup. There's Heinz ketchup, which everybody knows. They do all the advertising, and right next to it's the local store brand, you know, Safeway, Kroger, whatever it may be, brand of ketchup, which often comes off the same factory, and it's often the exact same materials. It just has a different name on it, usually at a slightly lower price. Right. So that's private label. So the idea behind private label is to go onto Amazon, use a lot of these tools that exist, these software tools, third-party software tools, find the opportunities. And that could be either based on keywords, or it could be based on complaints and customer reviews, and you can fix a problem and you can come in and compete. The Amazon business itself, the number one most crucial skill you need to have is math. This business is all about numbers. And so if you're not a numbers person, you need someone on your team that is a numbers person. It's not something where you get emotional and, hey, I built a better mousetrap, or I've made a new invention. I mean, there are opportunities there if you have a new invention or you have a new idea, but there has to be the demand. And the beauty about Amazon and selling on Amazon, it's a huge laboratory. I mean, with 550 million or so products on there, most of them with reviews, someone with thousands of reviews, it's a great laboratory. I mean, companies 10, 15 years ago used to have to do focus group marketing and all kinds of expensive research just to get this kind of feedback. And it's publicly freely available right now to anybody that wants it. So you can go in there, and if you know how to mine this data, you could find major opportunities. And so you want to look, it's all about math. So back on how much do you, should you start with, that depends. I recommend you have at least $5,000 to $10,000. I mean, you hear stories of people starting with $100 or $500, but usually they may have started with $100. But what they don't tell you is that a week later they borrowed $50,000 from their rich uncle. They have these rags to riches story, or they got terms from their supplier. There's something else to it. You can't start with you can start arbitrage with $100, but if you're going to grow a real business, you need money. I mean, you can start a business with $1,000, $100 to $1,000, but it's going to be a really slow build. So the more you have, the faster you can go. And so what I always say is, if you're going to start this business, how much do you need? You need 2.5 times your initial inventory investment. So if your first round of products is going to cost you, let's say, $4,000 to have made, say you're buying 1,000 units of something, that means you can basically spend about $4 per unit landed cost, which means the cost to manufacture the item, whether that's in the United States or in China, plus the cost to ship it. And if you bring importing it, all the taxes and shipping costs, that's basically landed in the Amazon warehouse. So you need 2.5 times that. So that means you need about $10,000 to start the business. If you don't have $10,000, you need to find a different type of product to sell. If you only have $5,000, go and do the math, and you have to find something that you can buy for about $2,000, your initial inventory.
So if you're buying 1,000 pieces at $4,000, what's the other $6,000 for?
The other $6,000 is because in this business, it's a very cash-intensive business. So if you're successful, you're most likely going to have to be buying your second round of inventory before you sold your first, and probably before you've even been paid for your first in full. So you're going to need to get, the worst thing you can do on Amazon is to run out of stock. If you run out of stock on Amazon, more than a few days, you're basically starting over. That's the death knell. 90% of the people that start selling on Amazon fail, or that take a course either don't launch or they fail because they don't do the math right. They don't plan it properly. They don't pick products that are within their budget that they can maintain, that they can sustain. And then the other, in this case of the 4,000, so you might need another 4,000 to place your second order. And then the other 2,000 for advertising costs. You might need some software, some other miscellaneous things. Right. That's the bare minimum. You need, in my opinion, it's better to have a better cushion than that, but that would be the bare minimum. And then it's all about math. It's all about looking at keyword demand. It's not trying to invent something new. That's Kickstarter, or there's other business models for if you have something that's brand new that you want to do. But best opportunity is to look at the demand on Amazon, use these keyword tools, see what people are searching for, what they're buying, what they're complaining about, and go in and either make a slightly different product of that or fix the problem that people are complaining about and then come out with something. And so that's why I say it's all math. It's all about the financial side, which most people are not good at, and the forecasting, and it's all about the keyword and the demand side. And there's some great tools out there, third-party tools that have come a long ways in the last 3 years that can really help you. But most people that even are paying for these tools, they're paying $100 for a tool like Helium 10, for example, that's one of the better tools out there. A lot of people don't even know how to use the tools. It's kind of like they have a nice car with all a nice race car with all these gizmos and buttons and all these kinds of things that they can do to really race down the track at 200 miles per hour, but they're just putting along at 40 miles an hour. So master these tools and learn these tools, and you can do really well.
Okay. And that's the first year, really, the mastery of those types of tools and things of that nature.
Correct.
Gotcha. We say a lot of the same things. I put myself on mute because I'm chuckling because we're doing one of the things I'm always saying is that, and I'm actually doing a presentation next week. And it's, if you want to increase the value of your business in the year before you sell, don't run out of inventory. You know that it's going to kill maybe certain things in terms of momentum on Amazon. I know that when you run out of inventory, it reduces your revenue and your profit. And that times your multiple is going to be the loss on your business value. I just said a lot. It probably doesn't make sense to most, but just don't run out of inventory. Do what you can. Beg, borrow, steal, HELOC, line of credit, credit cards, whatever it takes, if you've got a good solid business. As far as the brand sell or the private label, do you recommend and do you prefer seeing people picking a category? Let's say they're going to, I'm going to build a better mousetrap and it's a swimming pool cover. And then all of the additional products evolve around swimming pools, or do you think you find that great product there and then you do this search for the next great product and it may not be related at all?
I think there's two different ways to do that. I mean, one is if building a brand is difficult. Building a brand is not just sticking your name and your label on something. A lot of people think that's a brand. They think that if I create a logo and stick my name on my pool cover, I thereby have a brand and I have a bunch of pool. And that's not true. A brand is an identity. It's something that people relate to. It's like, you know, think of Apple. People lining up to get the new iPhone. It's a certain cult. You know, Amazon, Apple came out with it. Think differently. You know, it's hard to build a brand. And I don't think Amazon is the place to build a brand, in my opinion. I think Amazon is a great launching. If building a brand is your strategy, that's awesome. And Amazon can be a great place to launch because the marketplace is already there. I mean, the beauty about Amazon is they already have a huge audience and just all these cool tools that you can use to figure out how to reach them. If you go out and you build your own Shopify site or your own e-commerce store, you got to figure out how to bring the traffic there. You got to either start doing Facebook ads, email list, PR, whatever it may be to bring the traffic there. Versus on Amazon, you don't have to do that. It's already coming. You only use outside traffic. If you have to use outside traffic to drive sales on Amazon, you're doing something wrong, in my opinion. The only time you should use outside traffic to drive sales on Amazon is when you're doing a launch. If you're launching a new product and you need to kind of influence the algorithm, that makes perfect sense, and you should do that. But if you're heavily weighted on driving outside traffic from Facebook and you're sending that to Amazon just to make sales on Amazon, then you shouldn't be doing that. You should be sending that to your own store, because when you send someone from Facebook to Amazon, they don't become your customer. They're not identifying with your brand. They're identifying with the Amazon brand. They're buying because it's Amazon. They get it in a day or two. They trust Amazon. They know that it's easy to return, blah, blah, blah. Most cases don't really care about your brand. So if you're trying to build a brand, you need to drive it to your own store. But by using Amazon as a launch pad, because it has the built-in traffic, and then you can use the data you get from Amazon. You can refine your product, get that good feedback, and then take that data from Amazon. Even as a third-party seller, you can create what's called custom audiences and all kinds of stuff on Facebook, and then go out and build a brand where they identify more with you. And I think the best opportunity to build brands using Amazon is on consumables. On people, you know, maybe it's dog treats or supplements or something like that, where people are coming over and over and over. But if you're selling pool covers, building a brand is difficult. So what I tell people is, instead of trying to really build a brand initially, and that may come evolve into that, is more go after an avatar. So rather than just trying to be the guy that does doing all the pool supplies, to give yourself the best opportunity on Amazon, so you're not stuck in a niche. I mean, if you go after the pool supplies and you're doing pool covers and pool chemicals and pool everything else, you're kind of stuck there. You're like, okay, what else can I find in the pool category? Versus if you go after an avatar and you pick a person, let's say it's a runner, I'm going to go after people who love to run outdoors. Then you can actually go across multiple categories, and you can do something like something in the electronics category that's a fitness tracker or a band on your to hold your iPhone on your arm or whatever. Then you can do socks, and you can do water bottles. And you can cross over all these different categories, and you open yourself up to more opportunity. Or you can just, some people, they don't care. It's just the shotgun approach. It's like, I just find opportunities. I don't care. It's just cash flow. Typically, if you have a brand, it depends on the buyer. Some buyers actually really value that, and they'll pay a higher multiple for that if you're planning on selling. Others don't care. They just want the cash flow. So it depends. And so when you're first starting, you might just – I don't know that you need to think about that, because it's going to evolve. Most people, their first or second product doesn't succeed. It's more of a – some people get lucky, and it does. But you can ask most big sellers that are doing, seven, eight, nine figures a year. They'll say, yeah, my first one, it just – I don't sell it anymore. It didn't work. So I wouldn't get too stuck at that in the beginning. I would just get going, and then it's going to come to you. You're going to start seeing the opportunities, and you'll be able to evolve.
Gotcha. Great information. It totally makes sense. The avatar and being able to say, okay, outdoor running, people that are running, and it could be men, women, it could be kids. Man, the product breadth and depth is really, really broad and deep, as opposed to limiting to grilling products or swimming pool products.
Not to say you can't do that. I mean, you can do that, but I think the opportunity is better if you go towards an avatar rather than just a niche.
Yep. Got it. I love it. Let's talk about, for those that are listening to this podcast, Kevin, obviously they can tell you know what you're talking about. They probably already know your name and have seen you at presentations. What things are you doing, and are your, seven and eight figure friends doing that is new and different and must be done to help take things to the next level? What kind of tidbits can you share there?
Well, the number one thing is, to me, the thing I've learned in this business is it's not about profit. It's about ROI if you're trying to grow a business. When I first started, I was looking at products that would have nice profit margins. You hear people sometimes on Facebook say, yeah, I've got 40, 50, 60% profit margins. And those cases do exist rarely, but I usually say bullshit on most of those people. The average in a private label business is between about 20 and 30% if you're doing things right.
Let's call that seller's discretionary earnings for everybody listening. It's you run a net profit and you run a profit and loss in QuickBooks. You get net profit on the bottom. Then we're going to add back those owner benefits like your salary, like your meals and entertainment, like your travel and things of that nature that are not business related. So your net income plus your add backs equals your seller's discretionary earnings. That's what we're talking about.
Now, once you do your add backs, that could go a little bit higher. I'm talking about just on the books. You know, when you are factoring in all your costs, is about 20 to 30% on private label. On wholesale, it's closer to the 10 to 15% range typically. Right. And wholesale businesses are a little bit harder to sell because you don't have really a brand. You're just selling other people's products. You don't have anything proprietary. So they're a little bit harder to sell. That's why I also said private label is one of the better ones. But so let's say it's in that 20 to 30%. That's average. Some people are higher than that. Some people are lower. But if you're in that 20 to 30% net, you're doing okay for the most part. But what I used to do is this business is all about choosing products. The product is the backbone of it. And that's a stumbling block for a lot of people is they're afraid to pull the trigger because they're like, I only have $5,000 or $10,000 to start. Did I pick the right product? Did I pick the right product? And sometimes they get paralysis by analysis and they just don't move forward. But when you're choosing a product, I used to look at the profit margins. I'd find a crepe maker, for example, is one of my old products. And, you know, it had about a 40% margin, you know, from what I could buy it from, landed, and from what I was selling for. And I was like, okay, this is great. But the problem was I ordered 1,000 of them and it took me about 6 months to sell those 1,000. And then I ordered another 1,000, took me about 5 months to sell the next 1,000. So that's a turnover of a little over 2 times per year. So I had a great profit on it, but I was tying up my cash, tying up my money. And so ROI to me is the most important by far number in this business that you want to look at when you're sourcing products is what kind of return on investment. And that's basically how fast can you get your money back? And so I look for ROIs of at least 150% or greater on everything I do now. And that basically means how many times if I have, and it may be a lower profit margin, instead of a 40% profit margin, I may have a 25% profit margin. But if I have 150% ROI, I'm working and turning that money and that inventory much, much faster. And I can grow a lot quicker without having additional outside capital, without having to go into my IRA or whatever it may be, or take expensive loans that are out there. And so you can grow your business faster. So by picking high ROI products, you have a greater chance of success. For example, I recommend you at least turn your inventory 4 times a year in the Amazon business. So it's basically every 3 months, you need to be turning your inventory. Ideally 6 to 8. Some people, you know, the supplements business are at 12 or more. And just by example, Walmart stores, their average inventory turnover is 8.3. So 8.3 times per year, they're selling through their entire inventory. That's a critical number when choosing products and when choosing things to do, in my opinion. And so one of the bigger opportunities right now in the space is in the high ticket expensive items, because all these courses out there, they teach you find something that fits in the shoebox. It's lightweight, weighs less. It costs less than $20. It's easy to source. You can buy them for a buck or two in China and sell them for $20 on Amazon. And the problem is that everybody is there. That's where everybody goes. It's where all the courses, everybody finds the same products, the same weighted blankets, the same barbecue gloves, the same stuff. And only a few of those people succeed. And so if you go outside the box and look at the more expensive stuff, maybe you don't have to buy 1,000 units, you know, of them. You only have to buy, you know, some things that sell 5 per day, but they're selling for $300 versus things that sell, you know, 50 per day and it's selling at $20. You could make a lot more money on these more expensive things. And some people shy away from that because sometimes it's a little bit more of an investment to get into it, but there's great, great opportunity there. And the other problem right now is what's happened with all the low end stuff is the Chinese hackers, most of them are Chinese. There's some that are Russian and Eastern European, but the vast majority are Chinese. And it's crazy what's happening out there. There's leaks inside of Amazon where these guys over in China can get the actual data straight from Amazon, the actual conversion data, they're doing all kinds of crazy stuff, hardcore competition. And it's part of their culture to do this. And most people aren't aware of what's happening. And your chances of competing on that lower end are getting harder and harder and harder because of all this.
So you recommend to start off that way, or you're thinking in terms of larger people, larger account owners to move into that category where it's a larger ticket item and a higher ROI?
Both. Yeah. Both.
Okay. You mentioned that if you're sending traffic to your Amazon store from Facebook, you're doing something wrong on your Amazon, inside your Amazon seller account. What tools can be done? What, and maybe it's all basics, Kevin. Maybe this isn't anything new, but what are the most important things to do to make sure you're improving your traffic on Amazon as much as possible? Or is it a combination number of different things?
I mean, if you're a brand that already exists out there, Amazon should just be a channel for you. You know, you already have your own store. You're already selling in retail. You know, Amazon is just a channel. So that's a little bit different approach. But if you're starting this business and Amazon is your primary focus in the beginning, which is what most people are doing now that are doing an FBA business, Amazon is their primary focus in the beginning. And that's great. And people always say you shouldn't be an Amazon only business. You should be off Amazon. And I agree with that, but and you could probably tell me more about this, but my experience, Joe, is in the valuations. People always say, well, I don't want to just sell on Amazon. What if Amazon shuts my account down? Amazon likes to shoot first and ask questions later. And then I'm screwed. I need to be selling on Walmart. I need to be selling on Jet. I need to have my own Shopify site. But most people, the vast majority of people, that's a very small percentage of their sales. And from my experience, unless it's 20 or 30%, between, you know, most people say about 30%, and maybe you have a better number of your sales, it doesn't really add to your valuation. You know, if you're going to sell a buyer coming in, if you get 2% of your sales on Walmart, they're like, yippee. If you get shut down on Amazon, so what? You're still screwed. You got to fire everybody.
That's right.
And most people, it's hard to make that adjustment. So my advice is, if you're going to be starting on Amazon, take advantage of the platform. There's never been a better opportunity. It's one of the best business opportunities in the last 100 years of business to start selling on Amazon. And like I said earlier, if you're trying to build a brand, then use that data. And there's ways to do that to then start going off Amazon, especially if you're on the consumables side. But I think you're better off taking that same energy that you try to put into building a Shopify site or trying to launch on Walmart to go expand to Canada or go expand to Europe or go expand to Japan. You're much better off. You're going to get a better valuation. Yeah, Canada is like 5% of my sales compared to the U.S., but that's 2.5 times what my sales on Walmart are. And it's easy. It's the same format. I already know how to do it. It's a natural. And most people are afraid to do that. They're afraid of other countries, or they're afraid of other tax systems, or they're whatever. And it's ego based. Well, I want to be, say I'm sold on Walmart or I have my own site. It's bad.
Yeah. A lot of the folks that you and I know that are buying up Amazon businesses, one of the first things they do is take them international. They buy them and take them overseas. Let's talk about that for a minute.
But a lot of people don't do that because you're basically doubling your investment. Let's say you want to go to Europe.
They don't have the funds.
Most people in this business are cash strapped. And that's where the opportunity right now is like the people that you just said that you know and that I know that are buying these, they're coming in with money and they see the opportunity and they come into play. And versus most of these entrepreneurs, you know, they've used their life savings or and then some to try to build this in their cash strap. So they can't, I mean, to go over to Europe, you're basically, okay, now I got to buy all new inventory and float it and they can't do it.
Yeah, the people that are buying businesses like this that are coming into the entrepreneurial world for the first time say, it's great. Why in the world are they selling? And I always have to ask that question. And what they need to understand and what they're learning by going through the process is that most of these businesses, whether it's a Shopify store, Amazon business, even those that I've sold in the past that are a combination of both and have a utility patent, it's still bootstrapped. And most of the money being made is going back into inventory to keep up with growth. And they're not able to pull a whole lot out. And so they're bootstrapping and they don't expand overseas because they don't have any more places to dip into to pull more money. So somebody coming in from the outside that has that extra working capital and a mindset to take it beyond the 4-hour work week and run it, as you said a dozen times already, as a real business and grow it into the different countries and take it beyond a one channel platform and beyond Amazon. You could take it to different countries and it's going to increase your value. It is. When you can take it beyond and into building that brand off of Amazon into different platforms, it builds your value even more. But you've got to be challenged. You got to look at that and say, okay, how long am I going to be in this game? And how much am I going to invest in terms of time, energy, resources, risk into building a Shopify store and generating traffic to it? If you're going to sell in 6 months, for those that are listening and you hear Kevin's advice, you know, multi-channel, he's right. But every story is different and unique. You don't want to build a Shopify store and start driving traffic to it and investing a lot of money in breaking even or losing for 3 years down the road if you're going to sell in 6 months. My advice is do what you do and do it really well. Keep selling on Amazon and make that business strong and have some built-in paths to growth.
Another one too, besides Europe, I mean, like, are expanding to other markets. I mean, Amazon's in what, 13 marketplaces now? But besides expanding to other marketplaces, I mean, the other opportunity that's out there, and it goes again, back again against cash strapped, is retail. I mean, retail is not dead. I mean, there's all these stories about retail is dead and Sears is going out of business and Radio Shack went out of business and blah, blah, blah. They didn't adapt. Amazon is going into retail. They bought Whole Foods. They're opening retail. Amazon Goes. They're opening these 4-star stores now. They're going, retail is not dead. It's still 90% of all sales out there. And it's going to probably remain at above 80% for the next several decades. I mean, e-commerce is gaining on, it's going to take a bigger share. But so going into retail, using Amazon as a proven ground is a great way to get into retail too.
How do you make that leap though? Retail and Amazon, how do you go, okay, I'm going to go into retail. Is there a helium 10 for retail?
No, there's not a helium 10 for retail. It's a whole different, it's a whole different animal. You're just saying about the opportunities outside of Amazon is, I agree, going to Amazon, other Amazon marketplaces first should be your top priority if you can. But going into retail, I know several people that started on Amazon and now they're crushing it in retail. But that's, again, that's another cash flow thing. You know, you got to, it's a whole different animal. There's people that teach, like Karen Waxman stuff, that teaches actually people how to go from Amazon to retail and how to get into retail and how to use your Amazon reviews and sales and demographics. And you have this data like, look, you know, I have a lot of people in New York or these areas and you have 27 Target stores right here. You know, you should be carrying my product. There's a lot you can do there, but it's another financial thing. You got to wait 60 days or more to get paid, or you got to use factoring to factor invoices and purchase orders. So it's a whole different animal, but there's great opportunity there too.
But it's also, as you're saying, it's more cash, but it's also math, figuring that out and pulling that data out of Amazon. A lot of people have trouble just pulling the data out.
Yeah, they can't. That's why I said at the beginning, this is math. Get someone, if you're not good at math or data analysis, you need someone on your team that is. This business is not about, I see so many people like, well, I improved the product, I made it better, I know my product's good, people should just buy it. If the demand is not there, if the data doesn't work, if the analyst, there's too much competition, you don't have the margins, you got to bail. Too many people get too emotionally tied to products and it becomes their little baby and they don't want to abandon their child. Sometimes you got to kick the kid out of the house. So many people won't do that. I have a rule that after 6 months, I give a product 6 months that I launch when I launch a new product under my account. If within 6 months it's not throwing off at least $2,000 a month in profit, I drop the product because I can deploy that capital in a better way. And so I have, you know, some people, their business model is add products. They got hundreds or thousands of products in their portfolio. Mine is not that. I have about 15 to 20 and I do 7 figures. So it's manageable. And I kick out ones and I replace them with something that can give me a better, it's like stocks. You know, I have, I treat products like stocks. And I look at them like stocks. Where can I get the best return and get rid of the low performing ones and replace them, deploy that money into getting something that's higher return.
Let's talk about that just for a minute. We're running a little short on time, but I want to touch on new products and, you know, staying relevant. And it's going to be different for each one, but we're talking now about, again, the people that are buying the Amazon businesses. And one of the great things they can do if they've got the capital is to expand to the other countries. What about launching new products? Is there any methodology to how often you should launch a new product, or should you just adopt what you've talked about, which is it needs to kick off this amount of profit or I get rid of it? And how many can you manage? And the folks that you know that are doing really well, are they doing 10, 15, 20? What are they doing?
It depends on your, you know, I know people that have 800 products doing 9 figures a year. And I know people, typically the people that are doing 9 figures a year have a lot of products. The people that are doing 6 and 7 figures, typically, I mean, some of them have a lot of products. Some of them have 50, 60, 70 products. That seems to be kind of a ballpark range of these guys that are in the million-dollar figures. They typically are probably in the at least 40, 50 products, and some of them thousands of products. But as far as launching new products, it's all based on the more products you can launch, the better you can grow. It's cash flow and it's opportunities. You know, I see opportunities all the time when I'm doing keyword research and product research and I can't act on them. I just don't have the money or I don't have the resources. You know, I'm a small small team. You know, some people have 20 people and they could deploy faster. They're sitting in their underwear in their house and you know, it's just them and a couple of VAs. So you're limited by that as well. So it depends on your strategy and your resources, how fast you can deploy. But as you see opportunities, and they still exist out there, and there's still new ones coming up every day, is taking advantage of those. It depends on your cash flow and your team size. And the more of them you can take advantage of, the faster you can grow and the more you can sell for. But the money in this business too, one thing, important point I want to make, it's I truly believe the money's made in the sourcing, not in the selling. A lot of people are always, what can I sell the product for? It's not what you can sell it for, it's what you can source it for. Because you have more price, you're more immune to price competition that way. If everybody is going to Alibaba or global sources or online, Googling stuff, and just by example, you know, I just went to China, went to the Canton Fair, and there's some socks that a friend of mine sold last year and sold like $600,000-$700,000 worth of these socks at Christmas time. And they were paying something like $2 a pair for these socks. Well, I found those exact same socks by just going to the Canton Fair at 57 cents. You're not going to find that online. So most people that are out there doing Amazon, they're sourcing online. They're using Alibaba or they're using Google sources. My thing is get on a freaking plane and go to China, because going face to face, it's a big deal in their culture, and you can find a lot of stuff that just doesn't exist. I found one supplier of these Christmas bags that I was like, okay, great. You have a lot of bags. I might want to sell these next year as a seasonal item. I said, can I go to your website? And he's like, no, I don't have a website. Oh, do you have a catalog? No, I don't have a catalog. I said, so how did I order from you? He said, take pictures. You know, he had 10,000 different types of bags. Take pictures of what you want here and I'll give you a price. That, and the prices were ridiculously low from what I could find on Amazon. I mean, sorry.
Sounds awful and wonderful.
Alibaba. So I'm like, this is the best opportunity ever, because nobody else is going to find this guy. His quality is good. The prices are ridiculous. So that's where I mean the money's made in the sourcing. So if someone else, if I buy, back to the socks example, if someone else, you know, I'm buying them at 57 cents and someone else comes in and I'm selling mine, say, for $10. And all of a sudden someone comes in and starts selling them for $5. Well, I'm like, shoot, if I got to go to $4.99 to compete and I'm paying $2, they're with my margin. Maybe I'm going in the hole even without, after the Amazon fees and everything. Because typically it's about a third. I mean, just if you're doing napkin math, ballpark math, Amazon typically takes about a third of the selling price. About a third of the selling price is your cost of goods sold and other expenses, and about a third is your profit. If that guy goes to $5, there went all my profit. But if I'm at 57 cents, I can still compete. So that's why I mean the money's in the sourcing. And so don't be afraid to get on a plane and go to one of these big fairs in China, or go visit factories. It can make a huge difference. And people that are selling, you know, the biggest thing that are already successful, the number one thing you can do is, if you're sourcing from China especially, is get on a plane and go meet your factory. Go eat strange bugs and weird stuff and monkey hearts and whatever the hell else they eat, oh, crazy stuff over there, and get drunk with the supplier and watch what happens to your pricing. Watch what happens to your terms. All of a sudden, instead of 30% down, 70% on delivery, all of a sudden maybe you got 60-day terms, or you got some other things that can make a huge difference in your business, and the pricing is lower. Now you're their buddy. You get priority on the production line, you know, when it's Christmas time or before Chinese New Year, you know, your stuff goes out first. It's amazing what you can do on the sourcing side.
Wow. Kevin, it's incredible stuff. A lot of tidbits there. Incredible. Really. Thank you. I understand why you're traveling all over the world speaking and presenting here. If people want to reach out to you and find you, how do they go about doing that?
Yeah, sure. I mean, probably the easiest way is to go to amzmarketer.com. That's amzmarketer.com. That's just redirects to my Facebook page where you can, I don't sell you anything there. It's just where you can listen to all the different podcasts I've been on. There's a lot of free content. You might get some ideas or learn something. Or if you're already selling, IlluminatiMastermind.com. Or if you're new to the business, and I always recommend this to people, you know, if you're new to the business, or even if you've been selling for a while, go to FreedomTicket.com. It's FreedomTicket.com, and there's a webinar there. It's about a 2-hour webinar. You could choose a date. It's on auto replay. It's not live right now, but just watch that. You don't have to buy the course if you don't want to. But just watch the first hour of that webinar, and I think you'll walk away from that. It's not a sales pitch the first hour. It's a lot of hardcore data, how to choose the keywords, how to do things right in this business, and just it's hardcore training. And just watch that, and that might help you understand some stuff.
That sounds great. Hope a lot of people will do that, both the people that are currently running the Amazon businesses and plan to exit someday, and the people that are buying. We want them to be successful and grow their businesses and come back and sell them someday. So that's awesome. Thanks so much, Kevin. I appreciate your time. Look forward to seeing you at the next event.
Cool. Appreciate it. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Quiet Light Podcast. For more resources from this episode, head over to quietlightbrokerage.com. If you're enjoying the show, please leave a rating and review in iTunes. This helps share the messages from the show with more business owners like you.